the shore, and which is one of the paradigms perhaps of Romanticism painting, and this intensity of the natural energies on the natural forces, and what human being as a spectator, this positioning of human being as a spectator, as beholder in front of nature. This is what I want to, why I want to begin with this painting. It's just to perhaps to say a very obvious topic, which is nature is different from what we do with nature. Even our reading of the world or reading of nature is not necessarily what nature is. It's only where, as we are reading the nature, we are interpreting nature with our own parameters. So, of course, in a behavior and point under another behaviorism point of view, what we are seeing is just limited by our by the conditions of our tool, which is, for instance, the eyes. They have they are a human eye has a certain range of wavelengths, which are possible to be perceived by the human eye, and this is limiting, of course, what we are seeing on the world and our interpretation. So nature, first, there is something which is, we are talking about nature as pristine thing or as our original form or thing, is something that first we cannot really in deep know. Second thing is another level, is then we are talking about nature, is what we talk about nature is we're talking about what we think is nature. What we interpret, and there's different levels on that. There is this condition of what our tool, our brain, our senses can convey from what is out in the world, and we can interpret from that. Another level is what our psychology, our constructive mind, what our mind can interpret and construct or reconstruct from what we perceive through the senses. These are basic objectives and topics. But I think somehow is just to set the situation, what nature is, no? Or what can we know from nature? Then, after having taken these considerations, we're going to see somehow one of the possibilities of nature. I'm showing you some slides of the upper Lozoya River, which is in the mountains of Madrid, in a very beautiful natural zone, which is area, which is, this is a very good water, which is the water supply for the town of Madrid, for instance. And this river, little river, is springing on the in a former glacier range in Guaramillas, 2,400 meters high. And this in the upper part, this is a wild river. And I show you some images of nature just to take out, getting out of art and thinking just on nature, no? Natural forces. This is a pristine nature, so untouched somehow, no? Or seemingly untouched. This is an island on the river, and this place is called Island. And this is also very pristine, but this is a man-made thing. This is caused by a, this is a water reservoir, very little one, in the upper Lozoya River, and this is stagnating the water and making this island. So as we see, what we are seeing there is already a man-made thing. This is a human intervention. What we are thinking, when we are thinking about nature, there's already we cannot think already in, the, in this pristine, untouched, savage condition of nature. So under our even interpretation of what nature is conditioned by what the human being has been doing, especially in Europe, has been doing in the natural environment. So there is someone who has defined nature is this thing which is framed by between the motorways. No? These pieces of land and both forests which are framed by motorways. So this is a very ironical approach, but this is not very far away from interesting consideration. But nevertheless, there is nature there.
And
an artist is a human being. His approach to nature as in a creative way has to consider that what he's doing, whatever he's doing, is not nature. What we do as art is a construction. It's an something artificial. Artificial and art has the same origin. Something constructed, something man-made, or which is not exactly nature. So in the sense, this is work about nature. Focus. Anyway, this is not possible to focus anymore because it's like this. This is something which reminds very much to the paintings, some of the paintings of Gerhard Richter again, but it's not by Gerhard Richter, but by Alice Stepanek and Steven Maslin, which is a couple from, they are living in Cologne. Stepanek is from Berlin and Maslin is from London. And they are born in the middle and late 50s, and they are this work I'm showing is from 95, and the other is from 96. They are working with a very known gallery in Cologne, and they are not it's all on canvas, and on the left side you see this a painting of which is like very much realistic. Hyper realistic with this lash of nature with down the forest, branches, leaves, and so on. And but on the right side, this is spread, the painting is spread and gets to a kind of abstraction, which is also the movement implied onto that. And reminds very much to Gerhard Richter kind of things. And this is, as you see, this is also like a tree, which is very hyper realistic, but it's all on canvas indeed. Stepanek and Maslin, they say that they are not interested only in the perception, but for them the main matter on their work is the love to the creature, and what they cannot resist they want to refer to the they refer indeed to the human perception, but what is more important for them is this prime universal life principle, no? And they want to touch to this thing and to somehow make to cause a kind of awareness to the beholder to this painting, this kind of landscape paintings, and they want they work about the relationship between the human being and the creations and the interrelationship, no? Because they call this the creatures and the interrelationships, they call that the landscape, no? And I'm going to talk now. This is another work, which is by Osvaldo Romberg, which is an artist born in Buenos Aires, which is living in Paris afterwards. And this work is a landscape as an idea, and I'm just taking on the title, this landscape, and what nature is an idea that we are working with. So when we are referring to that, so it's not it's a construction, it's a human mind construction. It's not something like already the what we're thinking about nature is not nature. It's a reference to it. And he's making this kind of this is a silk screen. And this is a cliff, and this is a color proof of that. This is a kind of break. This is not any longer the romantic approach to nature in the artistic tradition, but it's something something else. This is this inclusion of the color proofs into that. This is a huge series of works I've been doing for many years. This is from the 71. construction. So what we are seeing is already a construction of the mind. No? And we are coming already in, after making these considerations, into the working with nature or about nature. This is of Giuseppe Pennone, and it's easy to see. This is a block. They are planks of wood, so timbers, which has been carving, taking out the, what is the tree. So you see, those are the rings. He's taking out the wood until coming to the rings of the wood, and just showing up again what is the inner content of the work. So this is a very much a sculptural tradition, or the idea of taking out what is a surplus. So this idea of Michelangelo on he's just taking out of the marble stone what is superfluous. And this is somehow he's taking out of something man-made, which is the timber. It's already a man-made thing out of nature. He's coming back to nature, but, or he's referring back to nature. Of course, it's again another man-made thing, these pieces of work. And I think this is an interesting thing to remember in the sense too. There is this is a work which is very much, sorry, it's because it's out of focus in the beginning, till it gets hot. And this is a work from Andy Walsworthy, which is made out of oak leaves. And it's a ball of oak leaves placed in nature. And this is, I'm going on that. One of the possible approach to nature is to make something nice out of nature, something decorative. There is a lot of artists on this way of working, like Nils Udo, like Andy Goldsworthy, and there is a kind of decorative approach of the beauty, of this goodness and lust of nature and coming into that, no? And Andy Goldsworthy is a good representative of this tendency. This is another work from Goldsworthy, places in... If I don't remember, in Canada, in northern Canada, and this is there are some balls made out of branches and other materials, natural materials, built wood, and other things. This is in a riverbed. There is of course the reference to nature, what is the inspiration by nature as a big painting from. Richter is a work of a Spanish fluxus artist, which is Juan Hidalgo. And this is a piece, which is an island, is made of, of course, it's made of sand and pebbles, and it's painting on this blue sea lagoon around the island, and with plastic palm trees, plastic palm trees on the island. And this, of course, a very artificial, man-made kind of thing. That is not more man-made than the works of Goldsworthy using natural elements. This is a work of 92 from Juan Hidalgo. And this is from the Boyle family in England, a group of artists which are working sometimes with structures they find in nature, also in not only nature, but in the urban sites. And this is a structure of a cliff. They are making this kind of works, which are exactly taking the material out of the place and put it into a frame and showing it like two-dimensional kind of works. This is a work in how to place works in nature too. This is a lake. A little lake in a reservoir in a water channel in Castile. This is a work of the Spanish Enlightenment and the whole engineer construction. It's a long channel into the plains, ethereal plains, and that's a communication mean in the Enlightenment time. And this is a work. This is a place of there is a fabric, an old fabric of a wheat mill. Using the water stream, and in this place there is nowadays a cultural, an art center, contemporary art center, which there are many artists who are working there, and some of them are working more in the landscape. And this is a work by two young couple, which are Leopolda and Josefina Otero, which are living not far away from here in the border, in Hondarribia. And this is a human being floating in the middle of the water, and there is a light into it. It's made of resin, and into it there is a light which glows at night. It's a close-up of the... So one of the interests of many people concerning nature and working with nature is this nostalgic idea of coming back to nature, of this kind of longing from the pristine beginning of the paradise and so on. And this this human desire of coming back to nature, I think, is present in many kind of works through the through the art history, and especially in our time when has been many artists have been working in the land, in the landscape, or making even works and so on. And it works. And so this idea of the pristine, I mean, this is a long tradition also from the Romantics. We can remember Thoreau when his life in the bushes in Walden, in Massachusetts, when he goes out to and escape to his cabin, and he's reading about how human being has to come back to nature, and how it's better to be in nature than to be among other human beings, which living in a very alienated way. Way. And I think in this is it has been this idea of this seeking for this, or this longing for this situation of human being like still in the paradise, so this longing for paradise. This is a common thread in some of the works. This is a kind of nostalgic content in some works, and which is are place in nature. There is a work of this is another approach to working in with nature, which is letting the natural forces come into the work or acting. There is a work of Mario Reis. There is another Mario Reis. Indeed, there are other artists which are working very much in this kind of things. But this very this work is an artist which is working in going traveling around the world, and he's bringing his canvases on cotton, framed, and they place it in riverbeds. And they he's going to especially to middle rivers and creeks, where he places the this, and they have a particular color from the inorganic, from the minerals on the surroundings, or also through the, there is a particular color of the water because of the organic living beings, plants, and so on. And this work, he lets this call this watercolors. He lets the aquarelle. He lets frames with cotton for a while being washed by the river, and they take the color, and he's making that. This is in Santa Maria River in Arizona. And there is another one. Oh, this is upside down. Okay, it's not so much important. This is. The other way around. And this kind of result he has afterwards. There is a work of this is a Cuban origin artist living in has been living in United States called Ana Mendieta, who is died. Some of you know this is a tragic story about his house, her death, and so on. And this is how she's been working very much with this coming back to nature, this idea of integration of human being. It's among other things, she has more other kind of works in of pieces in her work. But there is an interesting part of it which is this idea of the relation, human relation, and the divinity, and he's very much inspired in the matriarchal society and on the idea of the woman as goddess, and this idea of the Magna Mater, and on the matriarchal societies, and this principle of the relationship woman and fertility, nature, and this is a human anthropomorphic womankind, anthropomorphic vegetal construction on this trunk of tree. There is a human shape into the grass and this work. It seems I have been putting the other way around this, some of the slides. There is a work done in with some stones and making some this human primarial, who remind very much to these feminine idols of the prehistory in many cultures, in patriarchal cultures in Europe or in Native American cultures. The shapes of woman-like shapes, or her work on this work of her, which is like fitting into the structure of the rock, covered with clay and with mud, natural mud, and she's like fitting back to the, like incorporating herself to the environment and to the world. Here we see something like this. This is a very primarial kind of form, very much coming to the very archaic or very arcane kind of. We're coming now to a very known artist too. In the this is another kind of approach to nature too. Which, I'm going to show you some groups of slides from artists working in the tradition of the landscape or the earthworks. This is a work by Robert Smithson, which you know died tragically when he was preparing one of his main works, Spiral Yeti. This is one of his few still existing works, which is in Holland, in a quarry, in a abandoned quarry, and then he was working for some time there. I want to tell you the name of the place for you, for some of you which live in Germany or in France, and so perhaps we can come sometime. This is in Emmen in Holland, and it's made in the summer 71. He has this kind of island, kind of circle world shape, and it's a mound, a hill, another way, and it was supposed to be a temporary show, but the people living in the surrounding, they asked this to stay long, forever, and it was one of the few works of Robert Smithson which stayed. There is a this amount of white coral pieces in Florida. In there is a work of him in the sea. And there is a Spiral Yeti in Salt Lake in Utah. You know, this work is one of the classical works of inland art. And this is now partially underwater, and he died when was in helicopter, and this helicopter crashed when he was reviewing the evolution, the development of the work of this of the works. Oh, this is really. From him is about the hypothetical continent Lemuria, and this work is about the imagination of the world, about the imagination of nature or of in this case of non-existing sites. It's a mythical continent which was supposed to be in the region of Madagascar, Reunion, Mauritius Island, Seychelles. Region, no? And he's making a work concerning that, and he's making a project how to construct this kind of continent out of shells, out of seashells on the sea. This is of course an utopical project. I think this is very interesting. All the projects he has developed, Robert Smithson, are very worthy of seeing as well. This, you know, this is also a classical image of on land art works, which is this island surrounded by a rosa pink foam film around. In this is in the United States, and this is made by Cristo. You know, this is a very topical. So I'm not going to insist, but I think it's necessary to show this work to see some of the different approaches to art in nature or in the landscape or in the. There is. I'm not going to insist too much. You have seen already these slides from Walter de Maria. But I want to just to mention them in this context where now working. This is the Earth Kilometer in Kassel in front of the Friedrichshafen, and it's the cut section of just the upper section, what you see of the kilometer, which is into the earth. Of course, there is a kind of mystical work onto that. There is a kind of which comes back to geomantic. Which come back to acupuncture of the world, let's say, in the sense of something energetic, something mystical, in many senses. So it's not just a formal thing. Some of the artists, like Heiser, which is working into the landscape, they have a more kind of decorativism in the work. But some of the artists are not so. They have another content in their approach to work with the landscape. There is another thing: inspiration of nature. This is a painting. This is a garden. Let's say, the primarial garden, which is the flower pot. And this is a painting, a kind of aquarelle by Cézanne. And this is in a collection of a garden. I'm going now to show you garden works. It's a garden in Germany, in Iselhombroich. It's a natural preserved area. And there is a garden and art museum at the same time. It's the motto of the place is called Art Parallel to Nature. And I've been working 2 years in this museum in the landscape planning, assistant of the landscape architect. And in this place they have this aquarelle from among the. It's a very interesting museum itself. It's a mixture of things by Cézanne, etches by Rembrandt, in a classical house from the Baroque, in one of the island places, in a river. And there is there are some kind of constructions which are buildings, new buildings, but they are themselves sculptures. They are made by a sculptor in Germany, which is called Erwin Herrig, who was professor in the Art Academy of Düsseldorf, professor of sculpture. And he's a sculptor, but most of his things, they are very geometrical, constructive things, and many of them are models to make bigger things in nature. And some of these, they are sculptures, but they are at the same time architectonical objects. This is one of the buildings, and this is a house with a labyrinth inside. Of course, this is the labyrinth into the garden, no? The classical labyrinth into the garden. And this is a set of lagoons, lakes, and swamps, which were not existing before. So this is all man-made. So this, we come again at what is natural, what is. A garden is the ultimate artificiality, is what is not natural. Garden is something which is absolutely not natural. It's the nature sometimes made better as it is by man, no? By human being. Garden is like this idea of paradise of nature. And what humans wants nature to be somehow. It's a tame nature constructed. This was some ferial fields. And it has been completely reshaped and renaturated by the landscape architect. So what we see, those willows now is in late, so it's in fall, it's going to, they are now starting to preserve the willows against winter to freeze, and we cover now with that. And this, in these buildings, in some of them there is the art collection itself, which is a mixture of Luristan bronze, of Tang bronze from China, from the Tang dynasty, Yves Klein works, Gotthard Graupner works of contemporary art. There is every kind of thing all mixed up in a very interesting way of going from one work to another in a non-diachronic, so in a diachronic way, not on a, let's say, sequential time chronological organization. This is one of these buildings from Herich. This is in the flower part of garden, which is one construction which is can be used as a building, but it's indeed is a sculptural object. This is the inside. It's like a place for meditation and to contemplate the nature. So it's already a step for beyond. It's already if a garden is something artificial to contemplate, to see and to watch. Now he's constructing a scenario for the scenario place from which to watch the garden even. No? This is another of the object, architectonical objects, which is unreal indeed sculptures, no? Into the landscape. This is a work by Anatole, who was a student of Beuys, and is one of the person who has a workshop there, an atelier, and he's, of course, this is very much inspired on primarial man-made works on the landscape by in the of other cultures, thinking on the henge, on the construction, the cronlege kind of constructions, like those on, this is very much alike, like some of those I have seen in Estonia. And you can remember very much kinds and cronlege on menhirs cycles in Bretagne or in Basque Country, here in the Basque Country or in Cantabria too. He's working on all, every of those stones is carved with, there is a carving of images coming back to nature on human being in nature and animal kind of petroglyph of primarial shapes of natural elements. This is another, it seems I have been putting everything on the way, other way around, sorry. There is a work of Ian Hamilton Finlay, and this is a garden, a very interesting garden made by an artist in Little Sparta in Scotland. Hamilton Finlay, Dario has been showing some works of him from the Documenta, this guillotina blades, this test. One of the works concerning the French Revolution. He's working very much about the French Revolution, as those I was telling this, those guillotina works with references to Saint Just or to Danton and Robespierre and all that time. And this is a text by Saint Just carved on. Limestone and marble. Oh, this is limestone, indeed, if I remember right. And this is again, this is a work. It's a garden made by an artist, in the middle of the nature, and he's been working on pools, on trees, planting. There are houses made. Boats for going into the water, and all these are pieces of him. And the whole concept of the whole garden is an art concept. This is one work with this a tree, which is with a socle, which is engraved with the name of Rousseau. It's a tree devoted to Rousseau, no? And he's, I mean, this is again showing up how is the approach to art, from art to nature, in which terms is a construction. I mean, the sense, this is, he's really. Putting, just he's enhancing the character of nature, and through this piece, which is putting this socle around the tree. There's another work on garden. This is an interesting garden newly made by Jenny Holzer. And it's a garden devoted to the fallen on the wars. It's the black garden. And this is made in, you know, this is a kind of a spiral labyrinth, not a spiral, really a labyrinth kind of piece, which is made of black kind of shrubs and plants. And according to the different seasons of the year, and there are black tulips in other part of the year, like here, there are black tulips. You can, it's difficult to see because they are very little here. And this is a monument to the fallen on the wars of last century and on the First World War and on the Second World War. And she's really coming to that. This is nowadays, or in the last years, there has been a lot, an intense controversy about those kind of memorial places, about the German soldiers falling into the wars, in different wars. And now there is a very interesting kind of approach in this case from Jenny Holzer, and in which she's breaking very much with what is existing before, because there were some tables reminding the fallen on the Second World War, and she's putting, for instance, there, she's putting, instead of the black tulips, she's putting a kind of flower bed with white flowers, as kind of contrast and one of the, you can see very well, written, this is a text carved on the wall one bank in the garden. There is a work of Eva Maria Schell, which is a painter from Berlin, and she's making a garden here too. And she's making a garden about the algae, which are microscopic algae, and she's taking with the microscope, she's making photographs of the algae, with diatomeas and other kind of algae, which are living in this water place, and she's putting that into the surroundings of these grasses, and she's like talking about a kind of non-invisible garden, she's making this can be considered somehow a garden in a very open way. Now we're going to talk about another kind of approach to the garden, which is to nature, which is the travel. This is a work by British artist Hamish Fulton, which is working very much with text and with photographs. Many of you will know his work already. And his one, he and Richard Long, they have a very close kind of works in many senses. Although the work of Hamish Fulton happens always on the way, and is witness material from consequence of his travels. The works are just documents of his travels indeed, his writings, his texts, and his photographs. He's been working also in Iselhombrich, in this museum I was telling you, and now is, well, before, perhaps I wanted to tell you something about gardens, which is perhaps interesting. I have prepared some much more material to tell, but I think now is I'm going to focus very much on just into images and giving you very little information on contents, because otherwise the time is going to run too much. But I want to especially to tell you something is from Juan Eduardo Cirlot, which was one of the most interesting theoreticals about symbology and in Spain, and is very known in many other places in the world. About the garden. The garden is the place in which nature appears tamed, organized, selected, framed, bordered. For this it constitutes a symbol of the consciousness against the forest, or the which is the inconsciousness somehow, as the island in the middle of the ocean. So the island is also somehow the organized or the shelter place somehow, and the ocean is the primarial, the uncontrolled, the otherness, which we cannot somehow know. No? It's at the same time an attribute of the feminine. The garden is attribute of the feminine in the emblematic, like an Alfiato, another person who have been about the emblematic on the centuries 16th and 17th centuries. Well, perhaps with this is just kind of introduction from him. I mean, it's perhaps a very clear idea about gardens too. And now we're going to go about travel. The art is on the move. There is an interesting consideration from a writer, which is Bruce Chatwin, who has been written very much about nomadic cultures too, among other things. And his idea of nomadism, of the people who are on the move, as a kind of a state of mind, which is very much different, of course, than from the settled people, sedentarian people. And this kind of process on the move is like, for him, is a condition of the somehow of the relationship with the world. It's nomadic attitude. It's a very much different attitude as the one who is settled, is the one who starts to control very much the landscape and the world, and thinking which the world is something to arrange on the shape of a human being. The nomad attitude is an attitude which is very much coming on the idea of fitting into nature in many senses. No? And then in this sense, art on the move is has a very particular character. So I was talking about Mario Reis on the beginning. Mario Reis is working very much on the, all his work is on the move. He has not only these framed watercolor works on when he puts the cotton on the and the frames on the riverbeds, but also he has another kind of works which are like these blind drawings when he plays himself with covered eyes, back to a special landscape place like the valley or like Monument Valley in the United States or many places in the world, and then he starts to has some kind of pencils attached to the hands, and he holds the hands over a table with the pencils attached, and he's just with the eyes covered, and he's like this. And he's taking us with the hands without movement. And then after some time, somehow his hands are moving just by themselves, unconsciously. And this causes a kind of drawing. And this drawing has somehow, is the drawing of the place. It's the interaction of the place with himself. What he's feeling, what the wine is causing into him in this moment, sound somehow, but not this very confused act of the eye seeing things. No? This is another kind of more self-consciousness acting there, and also somehow has this comeback again to geomantic and to the act of dosing with the branches looking for water or for metal, this kind of dosing for water, this kind of very unconscious kind of approach to the world is the kind of work he's doing on this blind drawings. All this work of Mario Reis happens because of the travels and on the travels. I'm going to go a bit fast on this kind of works. This is a boulder on Baffin Island, He's working very much, for instance, with photographs and the test. And he's a boulder with he uses very much what he calls the bird stones, which are stones in which the birds stand, and even they defecate, they shit on the stone. They have their traces left there, and there is a kind of a very somehow a very intense nature presence into those kind of stones. And he's using very much of those. And this is another of those stones of him. There is in the Andes, in South America. And this is a kind of cairn. There is a circle of stones. This is in Tibet, if I don't remember well. So I'm sorry again. Seems I have been putting many of the slides up. So. This is coming now to Richard Long, which is this already was from Richard Long, this other page, and this is a work of walking kind of piece, and this is the kind of way one of the ways he has been documented this work. This is two walks, crossing walks in Scotland, and this on a menhir place, you know, you see the crossing place he has chosen is a menhir in the landscape, and then he's going through orienting his walk through this place. And this is one of the works he makes about the things he experienced, what he sees. There is a work. This is a circle of stones in Ladakh, in North India, close to Tibet. Placing, taking stones from the surrounding and putting them together. I think you know very well Richard Long, and I'm going to extend myself on that. There is an artist, here another artist traveling. Which is a great circle around the world, Madrid to Madrid in 80 days. And this is a work of Luc Deleuze, which is a work he made, just as I told you, working in 80 days, like the, you know, Jules Verne, the book. And he's beginning in Madrid and going through all the etapas, and he's documenting through this and through drawings the whole process of the and through the statement. There is another artist. His work in the Venice Biennale. He's an artist. This is Scala, which is an artist from Prague, who went to from Prague to Venice in his presentation. He went to to work in the where the artist on the Czech pavilion on the Biennale Venice of 1893, and he just was walking from his hometown to the exhibition place, and this was his work and all the documentation where he was seeing on the way. This is Marina Abramović, and she's a Yugoslavian, a former Yugoslavian artist, and with another artist from Germany, now living in Amsterdam, Ulay. They have been working very much as a couple. You know, surely most of you know their works. And in the last years, she's been working alone, her own work, and Ulay is the same. But this is a work they made both together in the Chinese wall. She began working on the sea, and while Ulay was began working on the all alone on over the Chinese wall from the Gobi Desert, and they met after 27 days. It was a 2,000 kilometers walk through the different parts of the Chinese wall, because they are, you know, there is a typical image of very nicely done with towers, but there are many places where the wall is made out of adobe or made out of mat, pressed mat, or stones or whatever. So they are very different parts of the Chinese wall, no? And this is another image of her walking. There is a kind of the works she made as documenting works after the just the photographs and drawings. And this is the moment where they meet, where the Ulay and Marina Abramović met. After of course they could not know where they were going to meet. There is this is a work by a photographer from Düsseldorf, which is this is made in the Tabernas Desert in south of Spain in Almería, and this is another artist which is working very much, let's say on travels. No, he's going with his camera all along the different places of the. So Jute was making this work, this kind of works. He's going to different places, to in the Switzerland, in many places. And this is work is made in the desert of Tabernas in Almería in 1995. And there is an interesting text here. About also another artist which works very much in the nature, which is Michael Bieberstein from Switzerland, and he says that for him he finds as an apotheosis of the human spirit. The scene of the landscape, the contemplation of the landscape, is for him an apotheosis of the human spirit. There is this is a cycle on the. There is an artist from Berlin also working. There is some interesting work on the Baikal Sea. There is an island on the Baikal Sea where is the remains of an ancient Neolithic culture which has completely disappeared, and there is an artist which is working on this. Constructing a new on nature, constructing a new mythological, let's say, reinventing the out of the with the things he found in nature, reinventing somehow this culture, no, which is we know very less about them. One moment. Well, perhaps I'm going to go faster and don't go too much into details. And this is from Felix Huber and Popok. They were two artists who were in the last documenta on the internet works. And they are artists who are working very much with traveling. Huber is a German artist and Popok is a Canadian artist. They have been making a work which is Arctic Circle. They have been working through the Arctic Circle and through the one was working on the Arctic Circle and the other was working on the tropical line, and then they were communicating through internet and putting their experiences, daily impressions, and all these texts and greetings, and you could launch it and in internet. So they launched it in internet, and they were communicating through computers on this way, and this is a very interesting project on art on the walk. And they, this is a previous work to document, and during the document they make another work which is about the equator and other lands. And there is a work they make all along the equatorial countries, in Equator and in Brazil and in Africa, through all around the world. It was possible to see in internet. After the internet is gone, they still hold these works online on different sites. If you have interest, I can give you afterwards the internet, the World Wide Web location of all these works. So, well, this is the way of they are. One of the works on Canada, on the about on this work Arctic Circle. This is Laurent Kabila in former Zaire, where it just happened that all this thing with the war in Zaire happened as they were there, and there is an interview with him online and photos of him, and this is very much interesting. All this is another level also. It's to be out in the world, and it's not just the beautiful travel, but it has a really another kind of level of there's all kind of social implications on occurring about they are very much documented about how people are living and every kind of thing that are happening. No? It's very subjective, but very kind of the old tradition of the traveler book, but brought to art and to the contemporary media like internet. Now you have seen already Boy's project of the 7,000 oak trees in Documenta, so I'm not going to show. There is another garden in Chicago, which is made by garden, which is called the Flute. It's a volunteer project, a community outreach project there in Chicago, which was made. This is a place where with a cultivation of salads and other plants, and this can be considered a garden. And this is in order to facilitate people without on the street, people who have no settlement or no, they have no house, and they are pushed to live outdoors, like beggars and other displaced people, to have a chance of fresh vitamins and fresh food in the sense in a gratuit way. It's a network of volunteers who were working on this place, and this happened for a garden show and in the town, and they kept this for some years, lasting this kind of work, and they were doing facilitating. facilitating on kind of hydroponic cultivations without earth. It was very important also, especially for people who are living outdoors and for people with AIDS. They are really, they need aliments or without, possibly without pollution, with microbia. And this kind of hydroponic cultivations without earth, just with water, was giving this chance of having plants and salads and other kind of plants without contamination, microbial contamination, so that they could have a, they could feed on clean things. No, I mean, this is not. I'm talking about. You have seen there are many different approaches to work with nature or concerning even the travel and so on. There are works which are more intimate. There are works which are more decorative. There are works which have more kind of mystic character. There are works which have a character which do not deny necessarily social content. And these are work kind of work which is very much social implications. And I think this. A really very interesting approach to what a contemporary concept of garden can be. You see how is the inner place of the hydroponic cultivation. Okay, this is another artist which also very much working on social issues, political and social issues in his work, which is a Chilean artist living in New York, which is Alfredo Jarr. He has been exhibiting here in San Sebastián not so long ago, and he's very much working on transnational projects and on things about travel, but on a very, very different way of a point of view as some of the work we have been seeing now. No, he's working about very much about the place that people emigrated. All these kind of things, and also of the poor, of the ones who have no voices, no? And this is very interesting also. There are many people who are working with maps. Map is a long term. I'm very interested in maps myself, and it's really another thing how shows how it's an approach to life, an approach to the world, which is very different from the world. Of course, it's a map is a codification, and it's an abstraction of the world. But we tend to see that the map is like the world, or the world is like a map. And of course, this is not so like this. There is a ideological, let's say, level behind every map. It's a cultural approach to map on the way of where is this what is the culture where this map is created. The moment also, the kind of the time in history where this map, those maps are created. We can remember, for instance, those maps of the time as the Portuguese and Spaniards were discovering, let's say discovering for those who, for Europeans, other parts of the world, and how these fabulated beings, like big, gigantic beings without heads in Patagonia, or these sea serpents, you can all kind of find of these fabulous animals in those maps on fabulous lands and so on. No, so there is very much telling about the time or when the map is done. And in our time, when we think we know everything, when science is really controlling and showing what the world is, map is still an ideological issue, because we tend to see maps on a perspective where. For instance, the northern hemisphere is much bigger as it is indeed in reality. And this is helping to convey an idea that the northern hemisphere is the most important of the world. We normally don't reflect on that, but Alfredo Jarr, through this map, is really very much reflecting into that. This is another kind of projection in which you see more a more accurate scale of the world. You see, the southern hemisphere, so the poor countries, they are much bigger than the north hemisphere, and it's the place where they do live a bigger quantity of people, no? In many senses, so, and they are the poorest too. So, and so how this helps to understand which kind of inequality in the international distribution of the work and of the richness we are living. And of course, the very peculiar the what is written in the to the map, no? The geography serves the first on the first to make the war. So the map also is even a tool of to know how to conquer in many senses. No? Cartography is to delimitate, to make a cartography of something, to delimitate what it is, and in order that you can control it. It's a tool to control in many senses too. And so he's really working, it's also Alfredo Jarre's work. This also, you can imagine, I'm not going to change it. This is Africa, the continent is a big work, and this is Africa on a water pool, which is in a 10-minute cycle. It is completely covered by water and slowly begin and built by the water, and showing up part of the continent, of the African continent. If you want to see, there are the catalogs, the two catalogs of the exhibition of Alfredo Jarre. This is in the library, and this is very interesting and very, very advisable to have a look on and to it. It is on the enter into the library, there is just down on the first shelf, the shelves in the first one. There is another work of him here, who is also inspiring, apparently formally is inspired in nature, so in the sea, the waves and so on, but he is working not about nature, exactly. This is the view, the site they have, the Vietnamese immigrants, when they go on this very bad kind of flossen, so rafts on boats on the escaping from Vietnam on the 80s and still on the 90s, going to Hong Kong in order to try to escape from not only from the political situation, but also from the economical situation. At the beginning, they were given the status of refugees in Hong Kong, and from there they were going to another to some other countries in the west. But after some time, they began to stop those in Hong Kong, and they start to put them in kind of concentration camps, and putting them back to Vietnam. And Alfredo Jarre made this work concerning this kind of problem. He made this in an exhibition in Montreal. Quebec, so Canada is one of the countries which is are still accepting a lot of of Vietnamese immigrants as political asylants. And he wanted to show there how important was this to be aware of this fact of this problem of the people. As you know, one of the still already, but especially more important for coming problems of our societies is about the people moving beyond borders, coming from non-developed countries to our, let's say, privileged first world capitalist countries. This is an artist which is working and very much interested on this social problematics and so on. And this is a work he made in Rwanda during the his travel work too. He made this in Rwanda when it was these problems when with the Hutu and the Tutsi fights and the killings, massive million killings, and he was there and he was meeting people and was sending postcards to friends all around the world. With this, this is very funny because it's this typical images from Uganda. He's working in Uganda and then sending from Uganda, which was one of the places where were arriving many of these refugees escaping from the mass murder in Rwanda, no? And he was sending these images of safari, images of beauty, of touristical images, and sending our people he knows, he has met, and escaping from tragedy, and he's writing to these other people, as you see. Jerome Ubanohoro is still alive, Alfredo Jarre. Dinamina, Mujah, Benimana is still alive. And so sending to all around the world to friends and to people, and it's a kind of giving consciousness of this fact with, when we tend to think on just another very different level about travel and about vacation, about tourism. This is another issue I'm not going to touch very much, but it's something to reflect. When we are thinking about nature, we have to think about what is the mediatic use of nature. When we're thinking about traveling, we have to think about what is the mediatic use of traveling and how all these ideas are spoiled nowadays on through the mass media and all this publicity and control of very interesting. So we cannot think any longer on when we see images on Maldives atolls, we're thinking, oh, this is the ultimate fantastic place, paradise island, to go and to escape and to be in, again in nature. It's a complete lie. This is a place which has been completely spoiled by tourism, where there is a tragic situation concerning trash coming from tourism, from Western plastics on the Western consumables, which are brought to Maldives because the tourists, they want to have, of course, the same things they have at home, and they want to eat the same chocolate they have at home, and to consume the same things. And they are coming with all this stuff from Western, and they are afterwards they have not the way we, the same space we have here to put all the trash on the landscape, but they have to put it very close to their lives, and they are putting it back into the ocean, into the reefs, and they are carving out the coral out of the reefs to make the beautiful hotels for tourists, and destroying their own reefs, which is protecting the islands against the flood of the sea. I mean, this is the other side of the coin of this goodness and beauty image of the touristic zone, no? And of course, also tourism is destroying the possibility of a more human approach to culture and to nature. I'm only mentioning that very very quickly. So this is a really very strong thing to reflect and to elaborate about. No? And this is a garden of mine, a little garden I made as a part of an installation in exhibition which was curated by Félix Guisasola in Asturias some 13 years ago. It was on an isolated, very nice train station, very little one in Oviedo, which now doesn't work any longer. And this was the former platform to turn around the locomotive, the little locomotive. And it was out of use, and it's covered by ivy and by nettle, this dirt. And then I'm placing this little teeny pot with a heather branch, heather spur, this on the middle of the, you see, there. And this is a garden of mine, and this I want to say goodbye, and thank you for your attention and your patience, and sorry for these problems with the slides. If you want to see more, I have slides of some of my works here behind, just so few, you want to see, or probably it's too late, so it's up to you. I'm showing to very quickly then. This is a garden work of mine in a landscape garden in an old, very old garden in north of London, out of London, in Aldenham. There is a yew tree, you know this tree which is very poisonous, and this tree of death in Atlantic cultures here too, in Basque-Land, in Asturias, in Galicia, is the tree of death. In Mediterranean groups, the tree of death is the cypress tree. Both of them are poisonous. Ivy in German, Ivy, this is the yew tree in English, es el tejo in Spanish. And then I'm making a piece of lightning stone, I carve it legend et in Arcadia ego, so like from Guercino or from Poussin, in this landscape vanitas paintings about the transitory of the human life Vergänglichkeit des Lebens, des Lebens, so the transitory of human life. And this, of course, just it was everything down for me. Just I just put a plate, it's a little intervention. So the same exhibition of sculpture in the landscape, on the orchard of this beautiful landscape garden. I made, I found the mounds of the how do you call this mould of the mould, Moldburg in German, mould in English, kind of blind mould. Mouses would go below the earth and make these mounds. And then I made some mounds out of chalk. These are a lot of it's a chalk landscape, a lot of chalk, and I put the stone on the ground, and I make some mounds playing with say some more decorative kind of work. There is a this is a work in Mauritius in a very beautiful. It's the best landscape garden. With a villa in Mauritius in, from the colonial time. It's called Eureka. And I curated an exhibition of international artists in Mauritius in this garden. It's incredible. This is a place of colonial lots. There are very nice people nowadays, but probably a couple of years ago they were not so nice with the slaves. And there is the ultimate work into the, there is the last of nature, the real nature there, that is already reshaped for in order to make it more beauty as it is. There is a set of wild, fantastic wild river there with waterfalls, and incredible waterfalls where you swim and you dive into the pools, and then they have been reshaped, or some of those waterfalls, to be nicer as they are, as they were. And there is a channel carved on basalt by a slave's hand, just in order to make like a kind of natural bath place for the owner of the house 2 centuries ago. So it's an incredible place. And in the middle of this beauty place, there is a lot of palm trees, and I found they were burned, some of the palm trees, you see, there is burned for some of them, and some of them have to be cut. And I used the trunks, the left on the ground, to carve them with text. Concerning coming back to this idea of the landscape vanitas, which is et moi aussi sur l'île, is written. In Mauritius they speak English and Creole from French, and I write it in French, which is the more liked language there. Et moi aussi sur l'île, so it's like and me too in the Arcadia, et in Arcadia ego, yo también en la Arcadia, no? The death is present also in the beauty, in the middle of the paradise, in the middle of the beauty. This character of just to put in the middle of the beauty, this pointing out to this condition of what was being done, why, how has been done this for the landlords there and everything by slaves and so on, and also about this in the middle of the beauty, the death trees, the disappearance, the all this idea of the transitory of human work, of human life. And in the middle of the of this water pool, coming a stream of water, I put a little work with a stone called so the fall. La chute in French. La chute is the fall, like in English, is the fall, like the waterfall, la chute de l'eau, yeah, the waterfall, but also is at the same time has the other meaning, the fall, the falling down, la chute is like this work of Camino, about la chute de l'etam, la caída en el tiempo, no? Is, no, Camino is, sorry, about Fioran, different. And then is the idea of the fallen down, the slaves, like those lost from paradise, fallen out of to be the chosen ones, no? And then they are the chosen ones, the landlords and the slaves. And I put this big stone I carried from the sea, and I carried with my hands to this river up on the mountains, and I put it stagnating the water on the big stream, and the water was coming over and making a water a fall. It was a reference to, I'm not showing any of that. No, this is the other one of the other works from this exhibition on a landscape garden. I'm not showing a lot of works of many interesting artists. I want to show this is mine. There is I have a video, but I think it's not worth it to see. There is another waterfall. This I made this is a big installation I made in Tolosa in the video festival in '87, and it's a waterfall in Cantabria, not far away from here. Elder tree, pool on the on a river, wild river in the mountains, in a natural reservation. And this was this work was made with the help of Marcelo Esposito. Piece in the and there is a work about this part of this idea of nature too, and well, I'm not going to talk too much about that. There is a work I made in Indiana, in southern Indiana, in the creeks, in where I was living there. It's in the Lake Griffith Natural Reserve, and it's a called I call a place for the geese. So, un lugar para los gansos. There is this Canadian geese, this black geese with the white spot on the neck, and there is a place where I discovered some of those. They are beautiful geese, and I cover some of them, and I found a thick stone, very big one, with a sheet of one of the bush, and then I carried from this creek where it was a big storm. A lot of plane trees of plátano. Plane trees were also, sycamores, as the American call, they were falling down. And I took a branch of them, which was like a human shape, like something like this. And I transport and make a lot on my hands, and I put it in places into the heart of the branches, which is here. On the branch, I put my glove from my. This is a work I made in the Kurisenegun, in the Colonial Spit National Park in 1991 before the Lithuanian independence. This is in Lithuania. It's a very interesting place. It was also for a time it was German. It's northern from Eastern Prussia, and a part of this huge peninsula. It's a land speed of sand, 98 kilometers long. Half of it is now Kaliningrad zone, and half of it is Lithuania, the northern half. And I'm working in no man's land here. It's a national park. It lives almost 2,000 people in this 98 kilometers long line of land in the middle of the Baltic Sea. And I found some, there are huge dunes, and these are moving dunes, which grave in the villages, and those are dead dunes, and I found three dead pine trees. Those you can see this one, and I carried to a special, very special place, which is called the Valley of Death or Valley of Silence, according depending if it's the German name or the Lithuanian name. And I carried an oak tree. It was the whole speed was covered by oak trees in the whole time. But the German Teuton Order warriors, they cut a lot of those trees to in order to build and to ships and to build fortresses when they were fighting with the Hellenists, with the pagan people from the Baltic as they arrived in the 13th century. And then these crusade warriors, they destroyed it very much. And after also the Swedish coming to during the Swedish Polish war, they burned the whole half an island, the whole peninsula, and so it has been suffering very much the nature. Although there is very nice situation, but now there is only a little spot of oak trees in the very north place, and I took one which was cut a long time ago. It's a 3 meters long trunk, like this, very huge oak tree, and I put it in the middle. A boulder stone from the glaciers, which was coming from Scandinavia in the ice time, arriving to the European continent from Scandinavia. And then I carved a red granite boulder with a figure which is like coming from a mythology, from a legend from Lithuania, an old legend. And I carved with an image of a snake, and I put it in the middle of this triangle. And this was a kind of work which was in the middle of nature. It was to enhance somehow, to enhance this special feeling you have in this particular place. And it's related to the own culture there, it's related to the cultural past and to the mythology of the place. And it's made in no man's land. And it's in a time, 91, when we were shootings in the border, between, because Lithuania has declared independence, I was not yet recognized by the decaying Soviet Union. So it was a very particular situation. Some people were killed as I was there in the border. You see, this is the red granite stone on the Albar, the oak tree, and full moon night. There is another work I made even more in no man's land, that is beyond nearly the border in a very particular area. And I found a ghost forest of birds, very white birds, a lot of birds which were covered by a huge dune, a 60-meter high dune, which was coming to the forest and killing it. And this is like an attempt of moving alive again, back to life, but it's there. It's okay, it's like a kind of Sisyphus kind of work. I'm working very much in concerning Sisyphus content as an allegory to human being and to creative act, like a kind of resilient, to be resilient to against death, no? I was talking before about Vanitas issue in art history, as this remembrance of memento mori of that we all have to die, and what is the nonsense of human project. The human project for me has a sense, in the sense as a kind of a fight against death, no? Of to enhance these spiritual qualities in the human being. And then I'm putting like back to to life those, this is a 3.5 meter long out of the sand and 1 meter into the sand. And I make these ceramic pieces on clay and put it on the feet of every of the nine, there are nine, three to the side, and between two slopes of the region, I place up those birds' trunks. On the top, there is they are covered with honey. Honey is a very important mythical element in Lithuanian culture, and it's an element of life. It's an element of very much concerning sun, no, the sun, and this is put towards the sun, you know. The clay is not burnt, it's not fired, it's not fired, so it is raw. So after some time, the own pots, offering pots, they dissolve back to nature. I have been visiting these works. The other one was remaining since 91 until last year. Still this year, I've been going very much to this place to make other kind of works in the landscape. And they have been evolving. And the other one has been, this one, has been there for almost since 91 until last year. Now it's disappeared. It's only the trunk falling down. There are some people who have taken the trunks they have brought to the gardens. And the people from the place, and okay, it's also the way in which we find that this memento mori, that's the possibility of human project. This is one of those trees, and you see the inner lagoon. It's a land spit, which is dividing the outer sea from the water fresh lagoon, this one from a river estuary. There is another one. This is already in the former German half of this peninsula. Now is this part of this Königsberg, Kaliningrad enclave, exclave in out of Russia, in the Baltic. Where, you know, in Königsberg was born Kant, Immanuel Kant. I had some interesting quotations of Kant about what Nazi is, coming from the book Critic of the judgment capacity, and I just I think it was not sense to talk too much in a theoretical way, but just to show works and different approaches. No? So I live in this, but I want to remember Kant was living in this country, in this town, which now is not German any longer. And this is a work I made in an old graveyard, a German graveyard, which was completely destroyed after the Soviet invasion. I went there because in this very place, in Rositen, which is the German name, but anyway, before the to be German, something years ago was Baltic, and the name was Rasite, which in Lithuanian and in all the Baltic languages means Morgenview, Morgenthau, no? morning, this kind of freshness in the water, in the morning, in the leaves, fresh water in the leaves of the plants, no? El rocío in Spanish. And this place, German name is Rositen, the Russian name is Rybacik, which has nothing to do with this other meaning. And in this place was born, was living a very interesting German bird scientist, indeed the first one who created a bird observing station, who has been very important for this kind of activities, scientific activities of controlling the number of birds migrating from Lapland to Doñana in south of Spain or to Africa in winter and so on. No? He establishes the first station for this kind of observation, and he was dead there. And I had very much interest to see how was his place. And then I went there, and it was completely destroyed, the graveyard. And not only that, but some of the graves were still fresh raped. I mean, they were open, some graves, very fresh sand, so some couple of hours before I arrived. Some people the people who opened that, throw the bones all around, scattered, and took, just in order to take the golden teeth. And then somehow I was very impressed. I was with a Swiss artist with me, a friend of mine, and he took a photograph, and I took this piece of broken stone from a grave. I took with me, and we ran away because we were even in a forbidden place, no? I'm showing that and telling all this horrible story, this thriller, because of to see how travel can be can have different levels and attitudes. And then I carry this. It was a kind of automatic gesture. I don't know why I took it, but I took it. It was out of horror somehow, no? And then we ran back to Lithuania, 30 kilometers north of this place. The living situation was very bad for the people, Russian people living there, so I have some kind of understanding of this kind of act of taking the golden teeth of dead people, of the corpses, of skeletons. But somehow I promised myself to come back. I make this work. I took a cast on bronze, those that star, and those texts, Sitivi Terra Levis. Sitivi Terra Levis is a very typical pagan Latin inscription from graves in Hispania. In Spain, in the Roman Spain, and in Italy and in other places, also in Germany, you go to Cologne to the Germanic Museum. There is some stones with this motto, which means "Should the earth lie gentle on you." Means that it's a pagan, non-Christian, typical inscription for graves, for tombs. And then I cast this. I make a green patina on the bronze, and I took the star from a grave tombstone in a beautiful old graveyard in the middle of town of Düsseldorf.